I know Jason in Toronto.
Love Talk
or maybe
Radio.
I would.
Good evening, happy Shabbat, and welcome to Yada Yah Radio. It's my pleasure to be with you. We have most of our normal cast of characters. We have Larry here and Kirk. How are you guys?
Good evening. Very good.
Good, good. Nice to be back with you. We received an email that Larry was forwarded to me by you that I know has also been read by you, Kirk, that we think came from Jason in Canada, who is the fellow that called regularly into the Shattering Myth Show. And it's on Rainbow.
I think it was actually somebody in UT, but that's okay. I thought I left their name in there. But again, it may have been Jason, I suppose. Yeah.
Okay. Crediting who it might have been is really immaterial. So long as everybody knows, what I'm going to share is from somebody who is part of the covenant. So therefore, who it is, I guess, really doesn't matter, does it?
No.
The reason we're going to start with the Rainbow is that of twofold. The first reason is that I believe it was Jason now in Toronto who did send me a link to Ron Wyatt's last recorded testimony.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I remember that email. Yep, I recall that.
I don't normally listen to YouTube kinds of things. I did listen to this. And what I heard was very similar to what I heard his widow tell me about his experience inside of Jeremiah's grotto, which is directly under the site where the crucifixion took place, directly below the empty tomb on Mount Moriah. This place, specific place, would be today under the back parking lot at the Jerusalem bus station. And I have stood right above this place, not knowing what was beneath my feet. And Ron Wyatt was talking about his experience there. Now, there was a couple of things that were unique to the recording that I had not heard his widow share. And one of those two things was that she told me that the Malak that met with him there told Ron that the tablets would be displayed at a time during the tribulation, but did not tell me what the event was. And so when I'm listening to this, Ron revealed precisely what the Malak said. And the Malak told Ron precisely when the two tablets that Yahweh etched in stone with his own hand would be displayed. Do you guys listen to what he had to say?
I did. I don't recall now what he said. It was...
He said when the Sunday law is established. When the
seven evangelicals were arrested down in Mexico here a couple of days ago for not converting to Catholicism. It's an interesting little story.
Yeah.
It kind of falls right in line with what we're discussing
absolutely.
Here.
So Ron Wyatt said twice to the to Bill, who was recording this, that he says, you know, I have in the past spoke of these tablets being displayed during at the time of the mark of the beast, and inferred that's what the Malak, and he used the term angel, but Malak had told me, but that's not exactly what they did tell me, and I want to clear up the record because, you know, it might be important. They told me they would be displayed when the Sunday law was established. Do you have any idea how difficult that would have been
for a Christian?
Mm-hmm. Do you have any how difficult that would have been for the man who was going to relay his words at a conference that was established by Christians, that these tablets are going to be displayed when Christianity is mandated? I mean, think about that. Here's the Malak. I mean, listen, folks, for those who are new to this program, and I probably not a lot are, and probably don't know my position on Ron Wyatt or even who Ron Wyatt is. So excuse me for a moment. Ron Wyatt is an extraordinary man who is no longer with us. I suspect, may have come to understand and embrace the covenant in his last days. I don't know that for certain. I want to think that is true. But Ron Wyatt began his career as an explorer because he was convinced that the Torah was not fable, but in fact historical. And he actually found Noah's Ark. And I have examined personally the proof in his museum, and I have Google Earthed the site and have witnessed the Ark. He found Noah's Ark, which is the topic we're going to be discussing today, Noah and the Ark. He found it. And he found all sorts of interesting artifacts associated with the Ark, including the metallurgy of the rivets, including the plaque that shows the eight individuals leaving the Ark. Now, he also found, and it's not on Mount Ararat, it's adjacent to the mountains of Ararat, and he did an extraordinary bit of research where he made a model of the mountains as they currently are, and then in a tank, and then set a wooden model of the Ark in that relief dimensional model that he made of the mountains of Ararat. And then he drained the water. And what he found is that boats do not land on the tops or even on the sides of the tallest mountain. The way that water works, it repels the objects as it recedes from the mountains. It repels the objects away from them. So those idiots that are looking on Mount Ararat for the Ark could never find it there because that's not the way that water flows when it's receding from a mountain. And he found it. Now, not only did he find it, but he went on in future discoveries. He found the place that the children of Israel crossed the Gulf of Aqaba, which is part of the Red Sea. He located Nuweiba Beach, which is the only place where 600,000 people could have amassed. He found that there's a land bridge that goes from Nuweiba Beach to Saudi Arabia. That's the only place where people could actually walk across the Gulf of Aqaba, even if it was drained, because it's the only place where it's not so steep. And he found and pictured the chariot wheels of the Egyptian chariots that chased the children of Israel across the Gulf of Aqaba, the Red Sea, and then were later drowned by Yahweh, simply letting the waters fall back in on them. And on the other side, he found a column that Solomon devoted to Yahweh, marking the location. But beyond that, he found Mount Horeb and the burnt top of the mountain. And he found where the altar had been made to the bull, the golden calf. And he found where the water had been struck, the rock had been struck, and that water gushed out. And he photographed these things. And you can see them all in Google Earth today. So that's an extraordinary combination of things. He also found where Sodom is. And he brought back evidence of the brimstone. In fact, I was able to actually burn some in his museum. So this is an extraordinary guy, but his last adventure was the Ark of the Covenant. He wasn't looking for the Ark of the Covenant, but he was allowed to see the Ark of the Covenant. Now, Jason, who sent me this audio of his last testimony, and it's done in a video for YouTube. And I've sent it to you, Larry. You probably posted it on Popular Truth, so other people that are listening, many of you probably have are aware of all of this. When I met Ron's widow and I listened to her discussion of the Ark of the Covenant, I walked away knowing that what he had said was true. Now, he had absolutely no proof. The picture was overexposed. So all we have is his testimony. But his testimony was so perfectly Yahweh that I was convinced the moment I heard it was true. And what he said was when he when he was finally able to come into that room, and in the audio he tells the many adventures trying to get there and what he found there and how it was presented to him, he recognized that it was directly above the mercy seat, the Ark of the Covenant, which is the mercy seat, where there's a crack in the limestone. And that crack goes directly up to a receptacle. He didn't say this in the audio, but this is what he not only wrote about, but I was told from his widow. And he wrote about it, and he pictured it. You can buy his descriptions of his witness there. That goes directly up to a place that's about 8 inches deep and about 8 inches square, where the vertical pole was placed upon which Yahusha served as the Passover lamb.
Yeah, and then the blood would have dripped down into the mercy seat.
Sure. Exactly. And he not only saw the blood on the mercy seat, he tested the blood on the mercy seat. One Y chromosome.
I remember it only had one set of chromosomes, male chromosomes, no female.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And so he did not say in the things that I read that it was because of the Sunday law. But, oh, my God. I mean, that answers. That is, you know, we're talking about the abomination of
desecration.
And we're talking about changing the times. That's what the prophecy and Daniel speaks of. Well, immediately when I read that, it told me what he's doing is he's going to establish Sunday just like the Romans did.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to outlaw the Shabbat just like the Romans did.
Sol Invictus Mithras. Yeah,
right.
Sure.
He is a direct descendant. The Torahless one's a direct descendant of Hadrian and Constantine and Theodosius et al. He is an outgrowth of the Roman Empire. Yahweh made it clear. He is going to do what the Romans did. He is going to outlaw the Shabbat. He is going to establish Sunday. And that's when...
Yeah, that's clear.
He's going to do that worldwide.
The Antichrist doesn't exist. He'll be the pro-Christ. He'll just be totally opposed to the Torah.
And here's the Malach behind the Ark of the Covenant telling a guy who at the moment was a Christian that these tablets are going to be shown to the world at the moment the Sunday law is established. And I want to tell you, that is exactly what's going to happen. And the fact that it's been relayed to us through this source, this confirmation, I find is absolutely tantalizing and marvelous.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something else that was said there, and that ties in with what we're going to read next. He said that the back wall of Jeremiah's grotto, was not only a rainbow, the entire wall was crystalline in a rainbow. He was describing something that he had never seen before, that it was literally a crystalline rainbow of light in the back wall. Now, why the rainbow? Over the Ark of the Covenant. The reason is straightforward, folks. The rainbow defines the covenant. The rainbow is the sign of the covenant. When you know, I know that circumcision is what Yahweh told Abram was the sign of the covenant, and he, you know, certainly thereafter became Abraham, and not denying that the separation there, the cutting there, and the blood that's associated with that cutting, minimal as it is on our part, is the sign of the covenant. But the first sign of the covenant, and the sign of the covenant before circumcision, even with Abraham, what was it?
It was the rainbow.
Right. Because Yahweh took Abraham, when Abraham says, I don't have a clue what I'm inheriting.
He showed him light.
He showed him light. He took him to the spiritual realm and showed him the light of the stars. Well, light is comprised of seven primary colors. Seven colors. And now I'm going to read now what this says, because the person that wrote this did some research and went beyond what you and I and we all discussed on the Shattering Myths program and on this program several weeks ago. He wrote, "The rainbow is made up of two essential elements, light and water. We know from Proverbs 6 that the Torah is light. We know that the Ruach Kodesh is the source of living waters by which we are cleansed and purified, enabling us to associate with Yahweh. And we can associate with water with the Ruach Kodesh." You know, the symbol of the Ruach Kodesh is always mayim, water.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're looking at the Ruach Kodesh, we recognize that she is the source of living water, the source from which life came, and we recognize that she is the one responsible for purifying us with the garment of light, and we've learned that the garment of light is, in fact, the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
But this combination of light and water is what the rainbow is. It's not just light. It's light and water.
We have to have a prism.
Yes, exactly. So it's the combination of these two, which is just extraordinarily profound. The association of light and water to make a rainbow is a beautiful story about how the Ruach Kodesh assists us in learning and understanding the Torah. While light contains all colors as a densely packed photon, but when it passes through the reflecting agent like a prism or water droplet, it is filtered to reveal the seven primary vibrant colors. In this way, water makes the contents of the photon more visible and understandable by separating the light out and allowing us to see its contents. The Ruach Kodesh acts in a very similar manner regarding the Torah. She provides us with the inspiration, the enlightenment, the understanding by way of revealing the connections and the information contained within the Torah to those who are observing it. The colors of the rainbow are also telling. When a rainbow is observed, at first glance, seven colors are visible. Roy G. Biv. Larry, I'm sure you're now up to speed on your Roy G. Biv.
Yes, I am. I checked you out, man. You were right.
Yeah.
You were right.
Seven colors. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. Now, by the way, what is the first step on the way to Yahweh? When we want to walk to him to become perfect, what's the first step
walk
along that way?
Well, we get
okay,
to know
so
him.
That's the opening requirement of the covenant. Before you can walk to Yahweh, you have to walk away from Babylon. But when Yahweh says, "Walk to me and become perfect," there's a seven-step path.
Pesach.
What's the first step? Pesach.
Mm-hmm. It's the Mishpat. It's Pesach.
What color is Pesach?
Red.
You betcha. What's the first color of the rainbow?
Red.
What's the color that's closest to Earth on the rainbow?
Blue.
No, red.
Oh, red?
Red.
Closest
red.
To the Earth?
Yeah. Really? Red, the first step of the rainbow.
Oh, yeah, on the very bottom. Yeah.
Always
yeah, right.
Red.
Yeah.
First step in the covenant, Pesach. First step in the rainbow, blood red, man. I don't think that's by coincidence. Now, as you go up the chain, you see yellow. What color is the bread? Oh, it should be orange. I'm sorry, but not yellow. Orange. Orange. What color is the bread?
You make a crayon out of orange.
Right. Right. Orange. Yellow is the closest color there to what we consider pure light. We become like Yahweh on Bukhurim.
It's certainly the brightest color, too.
It's the brightest of all the colors. We become
and warmest color.
Brilliant. Yellow light. Warm yellow light like the sun. The light of the stars on Bukhurim. That's the third step along the way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, what is the day that we grow, that we are empowered and enriched?
It's in the seventh Sabbath.
Right, Shavua, right?
Shavua.
What is the fourth color in the rainbow going Red, green. Orange, yellow. It's what color?
Green. Mm-hmm.
Green. What's the color of growth?
Well, that's when things are green. Growing.
That's right. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Green. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's we're working right on through the seven Moed Mikra. And, you know, the last color being violet. It's the highest wavelength. It's the most, for most people, it's the most beautiful color. It's also the color of royalty. Always been the color
royalty,
of royalty.
Yeah.
We come
yeah.
into the presence mm-hmm. of royalty. We literally come into the presence of the most beautiful of all colors.
Yeah, but we missed blue, didn't we?
Blue sky.
Yeah.
That's where we get
taken up. Blue. We have blue, indigo, and violet. And blue is Terua, and indigo is Yom Kippurim.
Kippurim, because you're almost there, I guess. The purple.
Yeah, almost there.
The blue, the Terua. Yeah, okay, I could see that being taken off the earth, right? Taken out of the
being taken off the earth, yeah. Blue is red. That's the day we're taken off the earth, isn't it? We go into the heavens.
That would make sense.
I'm trying to get the indigo,
though.
I am certain that there's somebody out there that understands. I was thrilled just to be able to get the five most important. I wanted to understand the four fulfilled ones and the ultimate destination. So I was.
Well, you got six of the seven.
Yeah, and you just added the fifth one. So all we're missing is one. Or the sixth one. So all we're missing is one. I don't.
Thankfully, I'm here to help with all this. Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So,
I'm gonna make you
how is that? You know, we were celebrating the fact that the rainbow is light broken into its seven colors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that the this realization told us that the sign of the covenant with Noah was identical to what Yahweh produced to show Abraham what we were inheriting through the covenant. I thought, you know, that was amazing, and then to see. This rainbow glowing behind the Ark of the Covenant where it presently sits, what a marvelous affirmation that we're on the right track here.
Okay, indigo is the richest blue, the brightest, the richest, intense blue, and yellow returns in the sky and enriches it, maybe.
Well, how about this? We're drawn up into the heavens on Terua, which is blue. They're just regular old sky blue, right?
Sky blue, okay.
In fact, it's the color that's hardest to see in the rainbow because it's contrast against the sky, which is
mm-hmm.
the same color, right?
More content, yeah.
So, yeah, so it's the one that you can't even see. We just disappear. And then we are in this process, and Yahweh's prized possession, the children of Israel, are in this process of being reclaimed, of being transformed into his very presence. So the richest of all of the blues. This color that is very near the indigo, or the very near the violet, is the day that is Rosh Hashanah, where we not Rosh Hashanah, but Yom Kippurim, where we are reestablished, renewed, repaired, reconciled. Particularly, his children are reconciled unto him.
If you mix the blue with the red, of course you get violet.
That's also true. So this is the blue, which is the message of Terua, which is the blue, that there's only one way to Yahweh, and that religious paths lead away from them. The message of Terua.
Well, yeah, but at
married,
that point,
married with
upon the
doctor,
return, you have both. You have have the people then entering, accepting the covenant in Jerusalem, but all the covenant people that were taken up in Terua would then what? They would be called back to witness the awesome Kapporeal day.
Yeah, well, that's great.
So you would have a mixing, as he just said, of blue and
blue.
Purple, and that would get your indigo.
That's right. Yep.
Does that work?
In addition, the children of Israel are going to accept the day, and that would also get the same color. Yep. But I tell you, folks, the notion that a crystalline rainbow of light exists, even this moment behind the Ark of the Covenant as it sits, in Jerusalem with the Malach guarding it, and about to, you know, just within a matter of less than 15 years of taking those stone tablets and showing the world that you, if you're going to accept the Sunday law, then this is the consequence. This is the creator of the universe established this.
Yeah, 15 years, like 11 years. I mean, I really think
11 years is 2026. But so 11 years plus 3.5 is probably the timing we're looking at here. So 14.5 years.
I'm in charge.
Yeah,
okay. He puts on an act there for a while. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So this is pretty amazing stuff. So anyway, the as we continue to just read through this this email, we get past Roy G. Biv. It says, when looking closer, many more mixtures of hues are visible between those primaries. However, there are colors not observable in the rainbow. There are colors that just do not exist in a rainbow. And they're earth tones. There's no tints or shades. No grays, no blacks are found in a rainbow. Now, I found that particularly appealing. No earth tones. No earth tones. Earth is a physical manifestation. From dust to dust, from dirt to dirt and dust to dust, it is the thing that decays. It is the essence of our physical mortal bodies. It is material. When we inherit the covenant, we transcend. We transition from matter to energy. We go from matter to light. There are no earth tones in that rainbow because there's nothing about our spiritual existence with Yahweh that is dirtied up by the corruption of the earth. We are liberated from all of that. There are no earth tones in the rainbow. You notice also, he said, there's no grays, no blacks. The rainbow is pure light. Light filtered in all of its beauty through the moisture, through the water droplets, but no grays, no blacks, no deceptions, no distortions, no corruptions, no darkness, no grays, no blacks, no earth tones. So it's not all colors. It's primary colors. No earth tones, no grays, no blacks. I don't know if that strikes you guys as strongly as it does me, but it it grabbed a hold of me.
No, that's absolutely.
No, it's a good point. It's a profound statement. It's the truth. There's no black. We're moving out of darkness.
Where there's light, there's no darkness. So.
Yeah, and there are no earth tones. I mean, that's also profound. No browns there. No tans. Now, this is because a rainbow is comprised of fixed-value hues, which are equally distributed. This means that the colors observable in a rainbow are strictly vibrant, are raw colors. No subtractive colors are visible, as they require a filter impeding the other colors within the photon. What did Yahweh say about the Torah? About adding to it and subtracting from it? Don't do it. The colors in a rainbow are colors without any filter. Nothing added to them, nothing taken away from them. To get the muddy earth tones, to get grays and blacks, you have to either take away or add to muddy them up.
You have to mix them. Green and orange make brown.
Yeah, correct. So, in the rainbow, nothing is filtered, nothing is added to, nothing is taken away. It's just the vibrant colors. It's just like the Torah. The Torah is comprised of vibrant colors. We should never try to filter it. Never take anything away from it. Never add anything to it. The Torah is presented in the vibrant colors of the rainbow. Now, all the things that this ghostwriter wrote, and I shouldn't say ghostwriter in this presence, the covenant
I
wrote.
I thought that happened to be my copied favorite. And pasted his name in there.
He's my new hero, whoever it is that wrote this.
Well, the one you got from Larry, the one I have from Larry Hendricks, it says Jason Meadows.
Okay. All right.
Jason,
well,
Hamilton, Ohio, Ontario.
Okay, so it is our Jason of Shattering Myth. Now, I just had a problem. The computer that I'm using to read this letter just went black.
Oh, well.
So, does anybody else happen to have that letter up that can share more of it?
Sure.
Can you read the next couple of sentences? Well, I hope my computer restarts because right now, even the passages that I worked on all day today to be ready to present, even they are now completely blacked out as my computer went black.
Okay, it says, as we relate to the Torah and the Ruach Kodesh to the rainbow, we find that the RQ, or Ruach Kodesh, reveals an equal distribution of information, and nothing is hidden because nothing is filtered. This set of colors are, well, it skipped something. This set of colors, this is even more revealing when the rainbow is compared to a prism. White light passes through the prism. Is separated cleanly into a monochromatic component with little or no receptacle or perceptible mixing of colors. So you covered that pretty good, unless you want me to stop for a minute.
No.
Okay.
But that's a direct correlation to the Torah itself.
Right. So in the case of the rainbow, the colors blend almost seamlessly into one another, providing a far greater range of accessible colors for individuals who closely observe it.
Yeah, and it is by observing the Torah, closely examining and carefully considering it, that the shades, the colors of Yahweh's testimony, of His nature, of His plan, they come out to us. You know, I had a person
the other day.
Yeah, and I shared the other day with somebody that's spending a lot of time reading Yada Yada and Intro to God, and I has even read good portions of Questioning Paul, and came out of was once a Christian, and then became a Messianic.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Messianic, was into doing the stuff that Messianics do, because it's really a blend of Pauline Christianity and Rabbinic Judaism. But this person had begun to question the Messianic movement because he also came to realize that Paul was a fraud. And stating that Paul's a fraud makes you really unpopular in Messianic circles.
And any Christian circle as well.
Yes. So he was, and he had stumbled on I think Shattering Myths, and therefore the books, and was saying, you know, now I'm an old guy. Can you give me a synopsis of what it is that you know we need to do or understand or say or whatever it may be to be reconciled in our relationship with Yahweh? And one of the things that I shared with him is that God doesn't have a short answer. And so I can't provide you with a short answer because the voyage of discovery that he is offering to us to see all of these shades and colors, to see the light, to examine the light, is the essence of his nature. It's the essence of everything. It's the essence of the covenant. It's what we were created to do. And so there can't be a shortcut, because if there's a shortcut, how will we spend eternity? What will we do for fun?
Well, I can honestly tell you that you'd also miss all the fun.
You'd miss all the fun. Yeah. So it is these colors that we find as we examine light that is the fun of the whole thing. But it's not just the fun of the whole thing. It is the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I wrote that back to him, and he still, you know, said, okay, you know, I've read the books, but I want to make sure I get this right.
Yeah.
It's a path. And you know, it could be a life's work. It's your curriculum vitae, as they say. You know, you learn something all the time, don't you? I mean, I did today.
Yeah.
You're constantly on. Right. You know, there's this learning curve. You're picking it up. I mean, is there any way, you know, somebody asked me, well, what's Yahweh's signature? And I said, well, prophecy. And they said, can you explain prophecy? And I said, sure. You know, and I gave them several examples, and they were just awed. It's like nobody even considered that.
Right.
Seriously.
Yeah, proof. You know. It's the proof that God not only exists, it's the proof that he authored the testimony that we are examining.
Yeah. I mean, I think D Powers had brought up to me the other day just about the, you know, the female ants. I mean, that's a really small thing, you know, but it's important because if he's talking about any other animal, he says he does this and he does that and he does that. Suddenly he's talking about ants and a she.
Yeah.
And it turns out they're all she.
Even more profound than the she. And it turns out, yeah, that 99.99% of ants are she's. And we would have had no way of knowing that until quite recently, and this was written 3,500 years ago. But the thing that was even more profound for me on that Proverbs 6 is the fact that God begins it by saying that if you've sworn an oath, renounce it. You know, then he goes on to explain that his advice to us is to observe the ant. And by observing the ant, the first thing that we notice is that, and he tells us what is unique about the ant, there's no governor.
They don't have a boss.
Yeah. There's no hierarchy. There's no general. There's no civil servant. There's no officers. There's no military. There is no hierarchy of any kind, which means the whole establishment of politics and religions and militaries, that's the stuff he's asking us to walk away from. And who would have known? That the ant is that one unique animal that everybody is productive and every individual has a job, but without a foreman, without any senior officer, without any government.
Right.
You know, I thought that was the most profound part of it. But you know, guys, what you're sharing here are shadings, little colors, little strokes. That are part of the most beautiful, brilliant picture, you know, ever created.
Well, I don't know.
Right. But there's so much to it. There isn't a short answer, and especially if it's going to come from you, Yada.
No.
Especially.
No, because it's the long answer that's the most fun. You know,
true.
Would you rather go on a short vacation or a long vacation?
Yeah.
You know, if you had a chance to go on a long safari or a short safari to examine all of the magnificent, you know, animals and landscapes of the Serengeti, which one would you prefer?
Thank you.
I'm going to go on the long one.
Yeah,
I'm going on the long one.
You want a short love affair or a long one? You want to have a short life or a long
one? A long one.
Would you like to learn a little bit or a lot?
A lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
My guess is that all of this will, you know, it's people that are open and receptive to truth and continually learning. Those are the people Yahweh wants to be around. I mean, after all, when he created Shawa and Adam in the garden, he was teaching them all the time.
Correct.
He really was.
Yeah, that's what he was. That's why he told us that Abraham was given his Torah, his teaching. So, you know, it is.
I don't think Yahweh can be any different than we are when he starts talking about this plan. I mean, he would have blurted it all out to Abraham regardless. I mean, you say, now look at this, and now look at this. I think that's the way he is, just the way we are when we get excited about it.
If you were to look at Yahweh's Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, would you say it is a short story or a long story?
A long story.
Yeah. Is there a lot of information or just a little bit of information?
It's an unbelievable amount of information.
Exactly.
Where could you
find
that?
Well, I mean, it's an unreal amount of information on so many levels. I think you can do it mathematically. I think you can do it artistically. I think you can do it linguistically. Mathematically. It's metaphorically, it's all in there, and there's so many layers of it. You know, we're just you know, peeling an onion. I think, Yada, you said you were being kind to yourself when you said you knew a billionth of what there is into the Torah, and I thought about that, and I think that's true.
Yeah.
You may know more about the Torah than anyone in the world, as far as I'm concerned. You're probably in the top 10 for sure, but I probably know the most. But I will say this, for what all we have to learn in the Torah, no, none of us know much. I think if you really understood the total Torah, I think you could actually create your own universe or close to it.
Yeah. First of all, I would agree that I don't know even a billionth of the Torah. And I'm glad, because the parts that I do know I love. And the more I study, the more I learn. And the more fun it is, the more enjoyable it is, the easier it is to assimilate, and the easier it is to make connections. But I'm looking for an eternity of learning from Yahweh and his insights. And I'm looking forward to removing many of the limitations that exist now in that regard. So, yeah, as far as I'm concerned,
you're smart.
We're sure.
Yahweh's looking for the same thing.
He's looking for the same thing. That's why I'm so relaxed about it. We have an eternity to explore these things together.
Yeah, can you imagine him comparing? Can you imagine Yahweh comparing our brain pans? You know, I mean, really, it's like trying to figure out if an ant's smarter than another ant. I mean, it just would be unbelievable. That's why we have to be amplified. I mean, otherwise, we would all be in a lot of trouble. That's my take.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the enrichment and the empowerment.
Yeah, me too.
to be much more than what we currently are. And this, the rainbow does a marvelous job of explaining that. So I just thought it was marvelous that we have. I mean, if you go back a month ago, I don't think any of us ever gave a second thought to a rainbow.
Mm-mm. Not this much thought to a rainbow.
No, and now look at the direct connection between the rainbow, the Ark of the covenant, the Ruach Kodesh, set apart spirit, the explanation to Abraham as to what we're all inheriting in the covenant. I mean, just think of all of that.
You want to hear something pretty wild? I'm going to give you guys something pretty wild. Last weekend, a friend of mine, well, it was actually during the week, but a friend of mine drove up from Stuart, Florida. And she wanted to pick up some notes and talk to me face-to-face and get some notes she could take back to her son. And we handled all that. But do you know, on the way up here, this is just the weirdest situation, she counted 8 rainbows.
Not 3, not 5, not 9.
8. 8.
Yeah,
the eternal covenant. Wow. She told me I counted 8 rainbows. I'm not kidding. I'd go another 5 miles or, 10 miles, 50 miles. There'd be another rainbow. She counted 8 of them on the way up. 8.
Wow, good for her.
How strange is that? I said, well, you know what that is? I said, that's the covenant. 8's eternity. That's the eternal covenant. I mean,
now, if I recall too that in the letter on the rainbow, it was also discussed that the rainbow is a circle, and if you get high enough, and I've seen this both in waterfalls with the moonlight, and I've seen it in airplanes, the rainbow is a circle. When we're on Earth, we only see half of the circle, so it looks like the bow is just part of the circle we can see. It's kind of like when our vantage point is raised, we're going to see Yahweh completely. We're going to understand the Torah completely when our vantage point is raised. As it is now, the muck of the earth, the muck of our lives, the mortality and our flaws conceal half of it. But half
the
of
lack
visible,
of our vision, all right. Kinds of things.
But a circle is something that goes on and on and on. There's no end to a circle. The eternal.
No, it's eternal.
Yeah. The eternal covenant. So all of that is profound when it comes to something like a rainbow. And I share it here. I had no reason to do it other than it just is so, when things are consistent with what we know about him, I have a tendency to accept them. I have no proof that Ron Wyatt saw the Ark of the Covenant, that he met with a Moloch. But when a Christian tells me that behind the Ark of the Covenant is a rainbow, and that the Moloch said that these tablets of stone are going to be displayed when the Sunday law is established, if that doesn't provide confirmation, when you get that kind of information from somebody that would have absolutely no reason whatsoever to accept any of that, that was hostile to everything that he had thought. In fact, when he walked away, his wife told me that he said there was something profound that happened to her husband in that experience. He all of a sudden realized that Yosha was nothing more than an extension of the teachings in the Torah. He understood that, for the first time, that Yosha was a living embodiment of Pesach, Matzah, Bekorim, and Shavuah. That's what happened to him when he saw the covenant, the Ark of the Covenant there. He realized then there's no new covenant. That is the Ark of the Covenant. And Ron Wyatt saw all of that at that very moment. Marvelous affirmations for us. All right. With that being said, I do want to, in the time we have remaining here, to look at the text of the story to Noah. I want to pick it up at a place that I think is so indicative of today, and we covered this several weeks ago, but it's too important to not reemphasize. Fortunately, I gained control back over my computer for reasons out of my control. It decided that it wanted to update itself, and it shut down after updating itself, and everything that I had prepared for today no longer exists in the form that I had it prepared, but nonetheless, Microsoft is in control of much of our world. Talk about not being able to...
You know who I think's really doing that? You know who I really think's doing that?
Oh.
I think it's Kirk. I don't think it's Microsoft.
I couldn't destroy a computer unless I dropped it.
Yeah.
Man, turn them
off. Hey, Kirk, it's what I want to
do. About 500 pages, so...
Yeah.
Well, hard copy, so... But Terry makes some, yeah. So.
Yeah. I see that Terry has written that she's seen a triple rainbow. I have never seen a triple. I've seen many doubles. And the double rainbow strikes me as important because Yahweh established the covenant with Noah and reestablished that covenant with Abraham. If there were three at one time, it would be that he has established it with Noah. He reestablished it with Abraham and through them has established it with us. Now, if somebody has a fourth rainbow, four rainbow combination, then I'm stumped. But I'm going to at least roll with Terry in the chat room on the triple rainbow, although I have only seen doubles. And indeed, relationally, the sons of God came to and pursued, this is Bo, were included in association with the daughters of men. And they bore children to them. These men were renowned for magnifying themselves, going off to war and behaving like arrogant tyrants from the very beginning. There's a lot because of the book of Enoch that's made of the sons of God as if they were some kind of
Moloch or never called.
Angels of the Moloch or Shabbat. They're never presented as Ben's sons ever. And while Yahweh created them just as he created humankind and the earth and animals and the like, the whole universe, to be created by Yahweh does not make you his son. No, the earth was created by Yahweh. It is not his son. The sun was created by Yahweh. It is not his son. The Malach were created by Yahweh. That does not make them his son. The only individual that Yahweh refers to, or individuals that Yahweh ever refers to as his sons, are the sons of Yisrael, the sons of the covenant. When he writes in Proverbs to my son, he's speaking to the children of the covenant or to the children of Yisrael. And so Yahweh created Adam to be his son. And so the sons of God are the humans that God made human, made like him in his image by giving them a nesama. Those are the sons of God. And to assume that the sons of God are angels is to be wholly ignorant of A, what the Torah reveals, and B, of God's nature. It also is to be ignorant of the Malach's nature. When Yosha was questioned about, you know, if a man marries another and he passes away or his wife passes away and he marries another one, or I've forgotten the example was, I don't know if the guy had two wives because one had died, or the woman had two husbands because one had died. Doesn't make any difference. But his answer was, there is no marriage in heaven. As a spiritual being, we are not a sexual being. And so this idea that the Malach came down with thingamajiggies so that they could impregnate women.
And why would they marry them? To make it legal? I mean,
oh, yeah,
really?
To marry them. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the whole thing is just so preposterous that when people go at the Enoch route with, and listen, this is the story of Noah begins by talking about Enoch. Yahweh loved Enoch. Enoch walked with Yahweh, and then Yahweh took Enoch to be with him. Enoch is one cool dude. I've got nothing against the real Enoch, but the book of Enoch was not written by Enoch. It wasn't even written within 2,000 years of Enoch's lifetime, so it's a fraud.
It was a pseudonym, and I've had people say, well, wait a minute, Enoch did this, and I said, who's knocking Enoch?
Yeah, not
it just
Enoch.
Wasn't Enoch that wrote the book, okay? I mean, that's what I tell them. And then
right.
You get into Nephilim and what it means. I mean, you tell me, wasn't it one of Ishmael's daughter was named Naphalsi?
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Yeah. It's speaking of religious and violent nature. The sons of God are the descendants of Adam and Chawa.
Mm-hmm.
They married animal man.
Mm-hmm.
Humanity, Homo sapien, best we can tell, has been around about 100,000 years. The oldest Homo sapien skeletons are found, and guess what place, by the way?
Israel.
The oldest Homo sapien skeletons. What country were they found in?
Probably.
I'm going to guess around Turkey somewhere.
No, Israel. Israel.
Oh, in Israel.
Who would have thought?
Okay.
But anyway, that's where they are. Oldest Homo. I agree. They were created in Turkey, Eastern Turkey. That's where the Garden of Eden is. But we would have a very difficult time finding them because, A, the area where the Garden of Eden is buried under Lake Van now, the crystal blue waters of Lake Van. You know, the most brilliant blue lake in the world is Lake Van. It's directly over the Garden of Eden. And then the earthquakes and the volcanic actions of Mount Arafat would have buried them. And then, of course, because of the flood, you look at like the Dead Sea the Black Sea there, which is where these civilizations, when God is talking about these people at this time, this is the Black Sea area, is where these people are. And the Black Sea was fresh water, and it was 500 feet lower than it is today. So all of these civilizations have been buried under a 500-foot rise in the waters of the Black Sea that went from freshwater to saline exactly at this time, at the exact time of the flood.
5,000 years ago. Sure.
5,000 years ago. Precisely. So that's why your answer is the right answer, Larry, except for found. Where the oldest Homo sapien fossils, they would be where you described them, except they haven't been found there, and I've just explained the story of the flood explains, and the story of Noah explains why we haven't found them there, even though that's where they would be. But it happens to be in Israel. So my point was that Homo sapien, animal man, man is a descendant of the ape, if you will, the ape man, animal man, has been around 100,000 years. Adam man, we don't know how old Adam man is. We know that Adam man, apart because when Adam man was created in the garden, we don't know how much time transpired from the moment that Adam man and Yahweh began their relationship in the garden to the time that Adam and Chawa were booted from the garden, because time...
I would say this. I would guess it was either 60 or 70 years. You know, if they chose man's path, it would have been 60. If they chose Yahweh's path, it would be 70. But remember, on the seventh day, we're going to be with Yahweh. I have a tendency to think 60 years, but...
Yeah, and by the way, just recording time as we know time, it doesn't matter. I think it is between 60 and 70 years as well, but we just don't know. And it's the thing that's important is that
it's irrelevant.
Is
when
that,
they left.
That Nesama man, Adam man, began to emerge from the garden, was thrust from the garden, and was therefore able to come and pursue the daughters of men. Right around the, which was Ish, individuals, 5,000 years ago.
It would have been about 6,000 years ago.
Yeah, 6,000 years ago. That's when they were able to do that, 6,000 years ago. And within that first 1,000 years outside of the garden of this intermarriage, there were enough children created by the marriage of Adam man and animal man to create many men with a nesama and many men without and women without a nesama. And it was the men with a nesama that had a huge advantage because they could reason. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they used their nesama to magnify themselves. When they gained an advantage, they used it to be arrogant tyrants and to go off.
They would,
to
too. That's what we see when people exalt themselves or have an unfair advantage. They often use it unwisely.
What did the Carthaginians do? What did the Romans do? What did the Persians do? What did the Babylonians do? What did the Assyrians do? All through history, what did the Holy Roman Empire do? What did Nazi Germany do? What did America do?
You can't get more arrogant than us.
Right. We magnify ourselves, we go off to war, behaving like arrogant tyrants. You know, I was reading the Republicans like Rubio and Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about why their plan, their master plan for the world, their master plan for the world is to capitalize on American exceptionalism and thrust Americanism upon the world.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
That the answer for the world is American
imperialism.
Yeah, American exceptionalism.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, I feel like when I read it, I felt like, you know, I'm reading Isaiah 18.
Mm-hmm. You are.
In their words, in their proclamation, I'm reading. It's like they read Isaiah 18 and said, "Well, this is what God says about us."
Now let me fulfill this prophecy for you. Let's put those fingers on.
But American, that's the thing that Putin wrote against. He said this American exceptionalism is such rubbish. But in actuality, what's happening here is Yahweh heard them say these things. He heard them do these things, and he reported back to us 2,700 years ago what they would say. And now we read them and hear them saying exactly what Yahweh told us they would say.
Right.
American exceptionalism and the way that we're going to impose it is to impose our military, to send out our fleet, to send out our warplanes. And it's exactly what Isaiah 18.
Right.
And Proverbs, when it's speaking about the four, right, the four forces in the end. One is a giant navy in the midst of the sea.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nobody possesses the giant navy in the midst of the sea like the U.S. Navy.
Yeah, right.
Nobody.
Yeah. Now, the reason I wanted to start here is is because of a premonition that I have. And the premonition is, and I'm not telling you this is true, I'm just telling you, this is what struck me as I was preparing for this evening and rereading this, is that so much of the Torah is past history presented for our understanding and benefit today.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the explanation of what King Saul, Shaul, the way that he was going to manipulate the people and rob them and take them off to war and steal their sons and steal their money, and how it was going to be a horrible idea for people to choose a government to be over them and rulers to be over them and to acquiesce to them. That story did the children of Israel absolutely no good because they didn't listen to Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
But that story does us a whole lot of good. And so I think that the story of King Saul exists to warn us about the wannabe apostle Paul, Shaul, and to warn us today about the presence of and the negativity associated with all the reasons we should disassociate from government and politics and patriotism and the military. Now, that said, I think the same thing is true with the story of Noah. I think that the nature of humankind 5,000 years ago is identical to what we're witnessing today. I think it has been true throughout time, but it has never been as bad as it is now with belligerent and arrogant nations going off to war and being savage.
Well, he said like it was in the time of Noah, it's going to be in the end. And, you know, one of the things I pointed out last week, I watched a beautiful show called The Last Lion. And at the end of that, they point out that these people were just out killing for trophies or killing to say they killed. They weren't killing for food.
Right.
They were killing for fun, for sport.
And by the way, I find that repulsive. I go into a home that's got trophies on the wall. I'm sick of
it. It's always some idiot
trying
to show you his 375 H&H Magnum or something. But
I allow two guys to hunt deer on our farm. But the rule is, if you're hunting, it's because you not only enjoy venison, but that is a staple in your diet, and you're going to use every bit of that animal for food, and you're going to kill the animal in a way that's as painless as possible for that animal, and you're never going to hunt just for the fun of it, ever.
Yeah, but they talked about 400,000 lions on the planet 50 years ago, and today there's 20,000.
Yeah,
you know, just like in the time
we hunt them for fun. And that's, by the way, the story of this, one of the things that God says that disgusts him the most is that we kill animals for fun.
Mm-hmm.
It does not please God. You know, when God said, you know, you should not make a habit of killing, he didn't say you should make a habit of killing humans. He said you should not make a habit of killing. And, you know, We need protein to live. And you know, I do not have a problem with a cow being raised and then killed in the most humane possible way to become food. that which is raised and is killed mercifully and quickly, specifically for food and not tormented during their lives, doesn't bother me. But when people kill for fun, bothers me a lot. It bothers God a lot. It's one of the reasons why I'm convinced that in eternity, that God is going to be most excited to show us life. So when people say, you know, there's life on other planets, loves life. Yahweh's greatest creation is not the physical world. It's the creation of life. That's why when we see the one story of Yahweh and Adam spending the day together, they're not going off and looking at trees. They're not going off and taking a hike and looking at the panoramic vista. Yahweh is parading before him life. And so when you just squander Yahweh's favorite creation, life, it bothers him greatly. You're taking away from him something that he appreciates, something that he enjoys, something that he wants to share with us. He loves life. And we're going to
spend, you know, that's a very good point. He doesn't just say people. He says continually killing. And that was something really as a young man, I'm very young, say 13, 14 years old, I'd go out and just shoot everything just to see how good a shot I was. I did it.
Yeah, and I
wasn't
I
very
recall,
smart now that I'm older. You know, I recall as a child
shooting a BB gun and killing an animal, shot at a bird, killed the bird, and it ate me up alive. It bothered me. It really bothered me. Got right to my gut and said, there's something about this that's wrong. And I've never hunted. I own guns, but I shoot at tin cans. I shoot at fruit. Love to see an orange explode when you put a round through it.
I know you're upsetting all the vegans out there.
Yeah, but no, I eat meat. And I, you know, we've talked on this program. I look at the Torah's instructions on food as being instructive on things that are injurious to us and what we ingest, and that every one of the instructions on food is specifically geared to teach us something about our nature and the nature of humanity. And so I'm, you know, I'm one of those who embraces
the nature of religion in general.
Right.
Too.
Yeah. Right. Yahweh's statement in Devarim through Moshe that you can eat whatever you want so long as you're thoughtful about it.
That would be no Easter ham.
I won't eat an Easter ham. That is for darn sure. I will not eat an Easter ham.
And he goes on to say not to consume the published material or the preaching or teaching of the wild boar. Wild boars aren't publishing or teaching anything, last I checked. Yeah. And so that just kind of throws out the idea that a BLT will kill you. I mean,
that's correct. So so as we look at these things that, I mean, I view the Torah as a liberating document that helps us understand who Yahweh is. But as it relates to killing, I don't think God has any, because he gives us specific instructions, so we know he has no issue on us taking the life of an animal for food. That's what Pesach all about, is celebrating the life of the animal for our nourishment. So got no problem with that. Looking forward to having lamb chops in eternity. But destroying life just for the fun of it is something that God detests. There are going to be no great hunters. That was
Nimrod's shtick, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He was the black hunter. Yeah, and you know what's interesting too is that the one thing we're told about Nimrod is that he was a mighty hunter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
that was his
shtick. That's the one thing we're told about. That was his shtick. God's not into hunting. If that's your now, hunting for food, I got no issue with that. Hunting for the thrill of the kill. You know, Nimrod, as king, isn't out there because he's hungry. He's not trying to feed his family. He's out there because he enjoys killing. God does not please God. So Yahweh saw that indeed the evil intent, the wickedness and the depravity, the ra'at, the deprivation, distress, and misfortune of Adam, of mankind, in the land was great in magnitude and quantity. And his every inclination, his every motivation, desire, ambition, and creative idea of his heart, and his thoughts, his plans, his plots, his schemes, were bad, raw, evil, wicked, immoral, repugnant, and fiercely harmful all of the time. Bereshit, the Genesis 6:5. Here, we see an indication of what the greatest beast of all of humanity was like, Rome. And what its derivative is, the Roman Catholic Church, Christianity. All of its plans are evil. Its every inclination of its heart is wicked. And if you look at America today, you'd say the same thing.
Well, while you've been away, I've been studying a lot of history. There's a lot of whistleblowers out there that you didn't see before.
Oh, really?
And there's so much information out there. There's one particular guy who was a soldier, but he also worked for the library, the Army Library, and he became a whistleblower. He put out so much information. I tell you, if you look at America and the thing, I can't imagine any human being reading this stuff from their archives, from the government's very own archives, where you wouldn't be sick to death.
You know, the more I studied what we had become, the more repulsed I was. I'm just repulsed. Now, what I would like, and since you mentioned this, December 24th is the day that Scott is going to, our beloved Scott from Shattering Mist. Scott's has been given the authorization by GCN to use their recording studios, to be able to use their COMREX units, which I have so I can call in, and the multiple lines, the toll-free lines, so you guys can call in. And on December 24th, we're going to record our first program. And Richard at BlessYahweh.com has agreed to post it, and BB, who's Bloodbath in this forum here, has also agreed to post them. He does them, I think it's on a YouTube site, and BB, you can correct the record if that's not the case, but BB has agreed to post them, and also Richard. And we're going to record the first couple of hours on a week from Thursday, the day is December 24th.
You said on the 24th at 8:30 in the morning, is that right?
Well, I think we want to do it at a time. We had originally scheduled it so it was 8 for Scott Central Time, which was going to be 6 for Kirk and 9 for us. And if that works for Kirk at 6, great. If it doesn't, then we'll start an hour later or a half an hour later at 6:30 or 7. But between Larry, you, Kirk, and I and Scott, we can communicate that over the next couple of days. But the point I was going to make is that Scott and I talked about it at length today. I think, and since you just brought up current events, and I think that America and the Roman Catholic Church collectively are the living embodiment of the beast of ancient Rome that Daniel, by way of Yahweh, was so condemning of.
I would throw London in there too. You know, the city where all the banking, what they call London City. You know, there's three city states
within the city
that are separate and apart from everything. They all have three symbols on their flag, and it's D.C., it's the City of London, and it's the Vatican.
Yeah.
And I think they're all three tied in, and I really think that, that England lords over the U.S. That's my opinion, just based on a lot of research I've done.
Okay. So anyway, what I want to do is to make this ongoing recording a blend of current events, but only current events that are directly applicable to what we learn in the Torah and the Prophets, and then mostly Torah and Prophets, but with for example, a revelation as to how evil America has become is relevant to prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think these recordings should still have some news. The rise of Islam is relevant to prophecy. News from Israel is relevant to prophecy. So the plan will be to have a much heavier emphasis on Yahweh's testimony, but still discuss the news when the news ties in to something that we know is going to happen in our future.
Okay.
All right, that said, Yahweh is saying that the nature of man, his depravity of humankind, and our every inclination of our heart was wicked, wrong, immoral, repugnant. And today, I think the reason I stopped doing Shattering Myths, ultimately, was there's only so much time you can roll up a waterfall before you just say, why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why am I doing this? You know, I realized that when I did Prophet of Doom, I had to wallow in the mud to expose Islam, and finally, it just got old. And wallowing in the mud.
I don't see how you did it.
I don't even know how I did it, but it just got old. And wallowing in the mud of world politics and religion, it gets old. And, you know, we now have thousands of hours of exposure and condemnation of Islam and of patriotism and militarism and politics on the record at Richard's site, for example, and then postings of BB, and so enough already.
Yeah. If you figure out where to walk away now, you ain't gonna get
right.
There.
Right. Rolling in Yahweh's light is fun, and so I just want to spend more time. Because that's the other part of the equation. Yes, you have to understand. You got to walk away from human institutions before you can walk towards Yahweh. But you can't walk towards Yahweh until you know who he is. Until you come to life,
yeah, people walk away
because
they're fed up with all the lies, and they see their lies. And
right.
I want to make one little announcement. I really forgot to do this. Yesterday at about 11:30, I think it was Texas time, Cherie Phillips passed away.
So sorry.
And so, people in UT are aware of it, but anybody else that is not probably isn't. So I just wanted to make that clear.
There are very few people who were as brilliant and as bright, as uplifting, as reinforcing a light as Cherie Phillips. Everything I ever read from her, every contact I ever had with her, was reinforcing, uplifting, reassuring, joyful. Yeah, that is. Now, while we can say
she
that
was a trusted admin in UT for more than 5 years,
and while we can say we will miss her, we won't miss her very long.
No.
We will not miss her very long, and right at the moment. While we are missing her for the moment, Larry, I know you guys had a wonderful relationship, but she's not missing you at the moment. Right at the moment, she's not missing any of us.
I would guess not.
No.
She's on the greener pastures.
She is in the green pasture right at the moment, and that's the beauty of the covenant. We will embrace again, and she's a very happy camper at the moment. And So I'm happy for her. I'm sad for us for the moment, but I'm very happy for her.
You're here.
Remarkable individual. She was just an example of what the Covenant's light does to an individual. No arrogance, nothing but joy, happiness, the thrill of discovery. A person whose perspective was right. She leaves us a marvelous legacy. That's my view. I don't want to mean to shortchange her passing at all, but I look at her as
all of our ultimate goal.
Yeah,
I'm at a loss for words. That's all.
Yeah, she is where we're going, we've all had the opportunity to engage with many hundreds of individuals who've come to embrace the Torah, who have come to accept the covenant, and she was and is perfectly symbolic of what the covenant does to us. Yeah, she's the shining light.
Well,
she is one of the Roy G. Biv's right now.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Moving on, it says, then Yahweh truly grieved, regretting that he had made Adam along with the earth. His heart was emotionally distressed and filled with grief and sorrow. One of the saddest lines in the entirety of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. To think of the creator of the universe that had such grand designs for us, who had such high hopes for us, who was willing to give us everything. And we responded this way. It tears your heart out, really.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the reasons why I am convinced that there is eight as part of the seven, and that the eight exists to eliminate this pain. Because so long as this current earth exists, the pain will be there. Now, I don't want to minimize death in the human family by telling you this story, but I do want it to share something that I have experienced that I think is somewhat, in a tiny, tiny, tiny little way, kind of what this is all about with Yahweh. Mm-hmm. I'm a dog lover. I've had labs all of my adult life. And the saddest time comes when you have to put a lab down. They're really part of your family. You come to love the lab. And it's unbelievably painful.
Yes.
When that lab passes. And the only thing I've ever found that turns the hurt into joy is getting another lap, getting another puppy. And so as I look at Yahweh and him, his grief, of course, I'm embarrassed to compare it to me losing a dog. But at least I know the feeling there.
Emotion is you love what you love. I mean.
Right, right. My mother passed. I felt a sense of loss. I have a new mother who's joyful. She is the Ruach Kodesh, the set-apart spirit. I have a new dog to replace the dogs that I have lost. And the joy of that is uplifting. So Yahweh grieved that he had created man because man was dead. Man was rotten. But in the end, even in the 7,000th year of us from the Garden of Eden, Yahweh's grief turns to great joy when there is the time of reconciliation and the time of camping out and the time of establishing Dod's kingdom of love on the earth. And the joy of family is returned.
And where there was once one, there's now thousands.
Correct. Exactly. But ultimately, for Yahweh's sake and for ours, we have to have a new universe. Because the new universe will exist without the ache of this pain. For example, if it was the existing Torah that was put inside of us, we would be purview to this pain right here, this pain we just read of us causing God this kind of distress. If the existing Torah was the thing that was written inside of us, then we'd be pained with this forever because it'd become the fabric of our nature, that we pain God in this way. And so that's why I'm convinced that the Torah that is written inside of us is a Torah with a lowercase t. It's got its instruction on how to operate, how to conduct our lives in eternity, empowered and enriched when we're just like Him. And that's the reason a new universe is going to exist, because in that new universe, we're going to be able to maneuver in time. And if we were maneuvering in time in this universe and went back to this time to see how rotten we were and how it grieved God, it would bring us pain. So that's why there's going to be a new universe. I think there's also going to be a new universe for another reason. And that is God is not selfish. He realizes that when you can share something that is marvelous, it's much more enjoyable. Now, he witnessed creation, and he shared with us the story of creation. But can you imagine how much more marvelous the creation experience is going to be when you know before creation of the thought that went into it, and you know everything that's going to, he's telling you everything that's going to happen, and then you watch it happen, understanding it as it's manifesting, sitting there right next to the Creator, how much more marvelous that's going to be for him and for us. And then, because he's not selfish, I'm convinced, and I don't have any proof of this other than it's just in a father's nature, that as we then get to explore eternity in the new universe, that Yahweh's putting his guidance and instructions inside of us, his Torah, so we can go out and experiment. That we too can create life. We too will be able to create solar systems and galaxies and to experiment with these things and to share what we do, maybe Larry's going to be to create a better version of the platypus.
I like the platypus.
That's certainly my goal.
Yeah, and maybe Kirk is going to come up with a different arrangement of colors and of light and a different composition. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows what we're going to be able to come up with, but I think we're going to be empowered to experiment.
I am going to create a singles bar that I cannot even be thrown out of. What do you think of that?
Well, there are things called a puzzle. Be careful.
Yeah.
We're going to call that universe Over the Top.
Over the top, yeah. Well,
there we go.
I do think there will be spirited beverages in eternity. In fact, I'm convinced there'll be wine in eternity. I think there will be, but you won't have the issues of side effects. Just the enjoyment of it. And so I think we will be eating and drinking and dancing and singing and exploring, but I also think we're going to be experimenting. I don't think that eternity is going to be, this is just my perception here, I don't think it's going to be all of us listening to Yahweh explain the micro world and the macro world and taking us on guided tours of the universe. I mean, that's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to do a lot of that. Part of it is going to be just like when we raise children and then they can be inventive and creative on their own, and we watch them create, and we get great pleasure out of what they're able to do. I think God's going to let us be.
I think that's true.
Well.
I mean, we watch it in the animal kingdom. We see it in our own lives. I mean,
yeah. You
know, you raise somebody up to be an adult, and you let them go after it. And
right.
That's his pattern throughout all of nature. So
you know, I had an experience last night where I was got to play with my granddaughter, but I got caught up with my son and my daughter-in-law, and we had a lovely dinner together. And during that dinner, I was holding my granddaughter most of the time, which made I was one-armed. And my son actually cut my steak that we had prepared because I only had one arm, so that I could eat it. And we're having this conversation as I'm holding my granddaughter, and after dinner, She's only just not even quite 3 months old, but she's really strong, wants to stand up. So I pretended like she was walking, and we took pictures of it. What a marvelous experience to be part of their adult lives.
Mm-hmm.
Why would Yahweh not want the same thing?
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Yep.
So
I had told my granddaughter, this is kind of fun, Piper, in fact, you called one day when Piper had come in, was showing me her dress. She thinks I'm the greatest man in the world. And she just says I'm awesome. And, you know, now she's, you know, 4 years old.
Yeah.
And she had sent over some pictures of her new boots to me. And so I called her and I said, I wanted a pair of boots. She says those are for girls. And I said, I know that, but what I want is cowboy boots, and I want them made out of ostrich skin. And she said, I said, can you get me that, Piper? And she said, yep. So the next time she came in, she was kind of bummed out that she didn't have my boots. So she came in last week, and she didn't have my boots, but she had three balloons. One for Haley, who was coming over, one for Yalda, and one for me, and she was so proud. She had brought me that gift. It wasn't ostrich boots, but it was a helium balloon, and it was so ridiculously lovely. It really was. She had come through. It was unbelievable.
And proud of it, and you were proud of her, and it's a marvelous thing, and I think that's what God wants. I'm convinced that's what we're going to experience in eternity. We've come to the end of our recorded time, so I did want to leave with one thought here. And that is, you know, Paul, the only thing that's ever credited to Paul that everybody says is just marvelous is his Corinthians 11 love chapter, where he said, where love never fails. Do you suppose that Yah failed with humankind because he didn't love us enough?
Hardly.
Hardly. Love does fail.
I think he also says love is not jealous. Well,
and Yah, of course, introduces himself as jealous. What he's saying is that the God of the Torah is mean.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and so, yeah, he's trying to discount. That's, of course, HaSatan inspiring the author of the Christian New Testament, Paul. But Yahweh is presenting his nature just like a father. You know, if your child were to act viciously, you know, what if you were the father of the Aurora gunman that went in and just gunned down innocent women and children in the theater?
If you were a father of a serial killer, a rapist, a murderer.
Right. Would you conceive that child
or anything like that? Yeah, you would just. I think you would just be a part of your brain would just say, "What just happened here?"
Yeah.
No,
you'd
really.
Grieved that you conceived that child. That's what Yah was expressing here. He was grieved that he had created the child that became man, because man had become a serial killer and a rapist. An arrogant, perverted pig.
Yeah, because he could have chosen any animal. He could have. He chose us.
And he was saying that just as we would. He's responding as we... He's showing us that his very nature is consistently and identically like a loving father. And so when we see him as father and not as God... As not as someone that's unapproachable, as someone who is not affected by this. When we see him as he is, we see him as a father with very human responses in the sense of love.
Yeah, in the sense because he went out and he found a way to redeem man.
Right.
He found a way for man to flourish. He found a way to take one and turn it into thousands. I mean, and it's sad that it's only thousands.
What Yahweh did here is he found one of his sons, that wasn't a rapist and a pedophile and arrogant and murderous. There wasn't religion.
Yeah, one.
We yeah. got one.
And, you know, it says something about families,
all
too,
human kind,
doesn't it?
Right?
I mean, it does say something of families, too, because, mm-hmm. you know, Yahweh probably didn't have the same relationship with those other seven people on the boat. You know?
Actually, you know what? Well, that's true. But you know what? When we, and we'll get to this point a week from today. When Yahweh is talking about Noah, he talks about Noah being upright in his family.
Mm-hmm.
And so Noah, as the trustworthy guide to the spiritual resting place, just like as Abraham, as the merciful father, is a human metaphor for Yahweh's nature. And so, yes, Noah is the key individual, but Noah's family was preserved in that ark, not just Noah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I understand that.
Yeah, and it is children.
But I think it was primarily due to Noah.
Of course,
that's my take.
But the covenant primarily
my own failings,
right?
I think about my own failings. I didn't raise my kids right. I didn't.
No.
Well, let me throw in one little thing about this last verse. If Paul is selling everybody on this cruel God, what do you do with this verse? This is not a Lord and Master who didn't care.
Right. This is one that's grieved. This is one that also decided he was going to do something about it, and it wasn't that he was going to love more. It wasn't that he was going to hate.
Yeah, he was going to wipe all the bad out and put these eight individuals.
Correct. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was going to prune humankind back so that the few good humans could repopulate the earth.
Yeah, pruning it to save the tree.
Yes, exactly. There's so much more. I mean, I know that we went over older material here.
Doesn't matter.
There's so much
older,
to this.
Not really that old.
Oh, so much to
this.
This
was all, there was a lot of new concepts brought up here. I just think that Nephilim, that they come up with to be giants, you really need to pound that, you know, that prostrating themselves. And the names these people had was unbelievable. But, you know, it's very important to know that Islam's daughter was named after them.
Yeah.
You know.
Thank you, by the way, for that history thing you sent me, Larry, regarding all the names of the people from Ishmael and all that was.
Shoot it to me too, Larry, and also Kirk, if you could send me your the history that you've been reading. I mean, I don't want to go too in depth into.
Let me see what I can pull out that's more germane to. End times correlation of what we've been talking about, and see if I can get something a little more precise. So instead,
I think everything we're watching today.
I know, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? Maybe a little more precise. Then.
Yeah, you know, like even Christy is now saying this. Don't talk about the possibility. We are already in World War III.
Oh yeah.
We're already
in World War III right now.
Who's saying that? Who's saying that?
Christy and his. In his campaign, he says the world has already started World War III. We're already there.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. They're marching towards it. We know it. It's going to become nuclear. It will go nuclear.
Well, that's the second phase of the war. The first phase of the war, of course, is the war goes in stages. The first stage is the fall of Syria. And the second stage is is directly a result of the U.S. brokering a divestiture of the high ground of Israel, narrowing the country at the waist. Muslims capitalize on that and march into Israel by the hundreds of millions. That's the second phase of the war. And the third phase of the war is when China and Russia and Shiite Islam go against Sunni Islam, America, and Europe. And that's the thing.
Oh, yeah. Who's going to lead that? Is that Iran at the head of that, or do you think it's Russia?
No, I don't think so. I think that it's the United States on one side, and I don't know if it's China or Russia on the other, but who's going to be the leader of it? But the primary belligerent is the United States.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's the primary belligerent.
And should anyone think Putin's on the right page? I saw him in a meeting with the Pope, bowing and kissing the Pope's ring too. So he's just another player on the
stage. Putin is the I think is the second best world leader today, maybe third best, but he is a deeply, deeply flawed. I mean, I would. He is wrong on his invasion of Syria. Although if he had invaded Syria, Assad would have been destroyed sooner rather than later. And that Syria, the city-state of Damascus and Assad really shouldn't fall until we're right on the cusp of the tribulation. And it would have happened within months, as opposed to within years, had he not. Acted. So I'm glad he acted. It was suicidal for Putin to do so. And his stance on Hamas is repulsive. His stance on Christianity is repulsive. Oh yeah, he's a bad boy. He's just the only bad boy that on occasion speaks the truth.
Yeah, well, I think the only reason is he's doing it is to oppose the U.S. I don't think it's got anything to do with his good intentions. I don't know that any of them have good intentions.
Yeah, I don't think he cares about the United States, actually. What I think he cares about, I think he is a nationalist. I think he cares about what's good for Russia, and he knows the United States is bad for the world and bad for Russia, so he opposes the United States only because we're...
Well, that would be more than you could say for most American political actors. They don't care one bit what's good for the United States.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I think he's one of the few nationalists that really only cares about what is good for his people, and what's bad for his people. He's opposed to what's bad for his people. That's why he's opposed to the United States. Netanyahu, I think, is another of these flawed individuals, wrong on many, many things, but is genuinely concerned on what's best for Israel's survival. And I don't know his name, but the Prime Minister of Hungary is, I would also put up there in the group that's willing to take a politically incorrect stand for the best interest of his people.
Well, that's a thoughtful analysis.
But, however, you know, what did Yahweh say about political leaders?
Yeah, they're all evil.
They're all evil. So all we're doing is saying the least objectionable.
I hear you.
Amongst the
apple seeds or the cyanide, you're going either way, pal.
There you go. All right, well, thank you guys for covering for me when I was on vacation. Look forward, I guess we'll be next Friday is the pagan celebration
I'll be here at Shabbat. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
I don't dance around the Asherah pole. I have no interest in it. Matter of fact, I'm so anti. I just got off a couple of debates while we were here. Did a couple of debates with a guy that was just pushing the Christmas tree.
Oh, wow, yeah. As Yahweh would say, you are a moron.
Yeah, I was in a cult.
I was a cult guy. Oh, you're a cult guy, yeah. Okay, well, then you're in. If you're in a cult, you're in
the Creator's words.
The cult that you're in is called the Covenant. And, you know, that works for me.
I want to join.
Yeah, count me in. Count me in. That's the one cult that I'm...
I'll join that one.
I'll join that one. It's the Bereth, the Covenant. I've already joined. I'm a signed, sealed, and delivered member.
You're here.
Yeah, I have no authority in it.
You're not even in charge here anymore now, Larry.
No, not in charge.
It's nice being the host. You know,
yeah,
I can just shut you guys down if I feel like it.
So be careful.
Yeah, last time I checked when I logged on, you wanted to know who was in the 513. Your voice was fairly relatable. That is that rascal that we've been looking for. even your voice couldn't hide your pleasure of the fact that you were going to have a comrade in the covenant tonight.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, fellas. It was enjoyable, as always. Great discussion. Always fun to get together.
Glad to have you back, Yada.
Yeah, my pleasure to be back.
Me too.
Good with you guys. Okay, and we'll We'll reconvene sometime on Thursday to do our first recording.
All right.
Okay. And I'm logging out now. That way I won't have any problems with it next week. Bye-bye.
Good night, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.